Still don't have anything to charge my controller.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at @RedRock_Beeble. I did forget to mention my usual intro that I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. We're here for another season recap podcast today, and we're going to be looking at the LA Clippers for today's show. So
let's get to it.
That is a fantastic idea, Michael Bolton. The Clippers, a team who finished 42-40 last season, narrowly missing the playoffs, but did execute a huge trade during the season with Blake Griffin going to Detroit and Tobias Harris coming back. Along with that, they acquired themselves an extra draft pick, so they now have pick 12 and pick 13. In this 2018 NBA draft, back-to-back picks, and the scuttlebutt is, or the word on the street is, the Clippers are looking to move up by packaging those two picks, maybe looking to get into the top 8 or top 7 with those two selections. They're a team that doesn't necessarily have a bunch of young stars or young prospects or anything along those lines. Tobias Harris is still pretty young, and he is probably their best player, but they don't have any young draft picks coming up because we know Doc Rivers's, obsession with not getting young players and playing them. The team was also too good to get good players in the draft prior to this season, but now they're embarking on, a soft-type rebuild and be looking to get themselves into that top 10 to grab one of those players. Many options available. Again, no position should be off the board for this team. Harris can play the 3 or the 4, sure. You can get someone next to him. DeAndre Jordan might leave in free agency, which we'll talk about in a second. Patrick Beverley, who knows what his knees are like. You got Teodosic. Lou Williams just signed an extension, but he's not what I'd consider a foundational piece on a good team. So there are obviously many different things or ways that they can go with either these multiple picks or a higher pick if they do trade up into that position. Now, speaking about free agents, Doc Rivers, he's the coach. He is not the GM anymore. DeAndre Jordan is the one I'm talking about. He has a $24.1 million player option, and I'd have to think that it's a little bit up in the air as to whether he takes it. We know that the market for big men is going to be crunched. Now, he's almost the best big man out there. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins would have been that, but coming off an Achilles injury, there's still lots of questions about how DeMarcus is actually going to recover, and big men and people with Achilles injuries in general is a concern. So there could be something there for Jordan, but he also declined quite a bit this season. So he might not find the market that he wants, and getting the $24 million guaranteed for next season and then hitting the free agency market the next offseason might actually be better for him. So I'd say it's probably 60% he opts out, 40% he opts in, but that still remains up in the air. There is Milos Teodosic, who has a $6.3 million player option as well, and Austin Rivers, 12.6, and I would imagine both of those players end up opting in to those contracts. In terms of other free agents, Avery Bradley, who they got in that Tobias Harris trade, he's an unrestricted free agent. He was absolutely shithouse for the majority of the season, dealt with a groin injury for big chunks, and how much of his season can be attributed to the groin injury, how much can be attributed to the fact that maybe he's just not that good away from Boston, I guess we'll find out next year, but one team is going to have to take a gamble on that, and I don't necessarily think it's going to be the Clippers, but we'll see about that. And the other big free agency decision they have is the table. Montrezl Harrell is a restricted free agent, and he was excellent in a backup big man role for this team and could find himself pushed into a larger role next season if DeAndre Jordan happens to leave. He is undersized. He's not a great rim protector, but he was excellent in terms of efficiency, finishing, his ability to rebound. Defensively, he was okay. He's not a starting center on a playoff team. He's an energy big man, a seventh, eighth man type of a guy who can come in and be really impactful. And they'd want to bring him back, but again, the price is going to be determined there. But as a restricted free agent, I feel pretty good that his price is going to be quite manageable. The other guy who's a restricted free agent is Ty the List Manager Wallace, who was excellent on his stint as a two-way. The team and him couldn't come to any sort of long-term contract agreement, so they never upgraded his deal. So now he's a restricted free agent. And then you've got CJ Williams and Pat Beverley, both with non-guaranteed deals. And I imagine Beverley will be back unless there's talk of a certain coming to the Clippers, and then they'll be clearing out as much cap space as they can. And Williams, another one of those two-way guys, wasn't quite as impressive to me as what Wallace was, but still did his bit as Rivers pieced together this team that was hit hard by injuries, and CJ was able to provide a role and show that he could be an NBA caliber rotation player. In terms of their stats for the year, they had the 7th highest pace and the 8th best offense, which I think, you know, given the personnel on this team, you'd have to be surprised that their offense was as good as it was. Defensive 20th, no real surprise there. Outside of DeAndre Jordan, who again took significant steps back this season, there's no real, you know, dominant defenders that are on this team. When we look at it, they were quite an efficient team. Shit at the free throw line, understandably, with DeAndre Jordan there. Otherwise, just really middling in most other offensive statistics. Didn't take a ton of threes. 22nd in the league in three-point attempts. Defensively, they struggled in quite a few areas. Allowed a lot of ball movement against them. 24th in the league in assists allowed. Didn't get many steals. Didn't get many blocks. And allowed quite a few steals and blocks against them as well. Let's look at some of the advanced stuff. The highest offensive rating and highest defensive rating, or best defensive rating on this team, went to Boban Marjanovic. Unsurprising, he's always been a guy who's able to put up tremendous stats in the limited minutes that he is out there. It's just sticking him out there for longer periods of time against all sorts of opposition can lead to problems. The worst offensive rating went to Juwan Evans, while the worst defensive rating went to Miloš Teodosic. No surprise with either of those two rookie point guards. Boban led the team in PER and win shares per 48. Lou Williams was the best offensive player by offensive box score plus minus. He had the highest usage on the team, while DeAndre Jordan led the team in win shares and VORP. And they're your advanced stat leaders for this Clippers team. Let's talk about Lou Williams, who was an absolute star this year. I didn't think he should have been an all-star. Many people did. I wasn't quite there. He was maybe the next or second next guy to come in on the Western Conference side. But he was really, really strong, obviously, at the age of 31, played 79 games and 33 minutes. He's going to absolutely piss in the Sixth Man of the Year award. 22.6 points, 2.4 threes, 2.5 rebounds, 5 assists and a steal on 44, 88 and 36% shooting. He was a guy who was a top 20 player when everybody was injured on this Clippers team. There was no Austin Rivers. Blake Griffin was out. Miloš was out. And he was doing pretty much everything. But he did start to come back to earth when other players arrived. It just evidenced by the last 25 games of the year, where he was the 68th ranked player in that time. He saw his efficiency dip a little bit there, down to 42% from the field. His three-point shooting went down to 29%. And his other numbers, he still had 5 assists, 21 points, and the minutes were the same. But those numbers really did dip in terms of the overall ranking, just because he started averaging about 2 points less per game, and he was hitting 1 3 less per game, which was odd to me that he was taking so few threes over the second half of the season, as opposed to what he was doing at the beginning of the year. But a huge rise in minutes. He went from 24.6 the year before to 33 this season. That is a huge, huge jump in playing time for Lou Williams. The assist rate also, you know, getting close to career, I think it was actually a career high in terms of assists per 36 minutes at 5.8. He was 4.3 the year before. And a lot of this stuff, it's really hard to have been able to predict this, especially with Beverley there, with Teodosic there. Look, just finding a large enough role preseason for Lou Williams was really tough to do. Look, how is he going, Austin Rivers, how is he going to get more than the 25 or 27 minutes that he'd been getting in previous seasons? And in fact, he blew that out of the water, and I wasn't expecting him to get really anywhere near this level of production. And I think there's a real chance that he does drop off next season. He's going to be 32 at some point during the season. Will his efficiency drop? Will the ball handling drop if Miloš is there for a whole season? When Patrick Beverley's back for a whole season, will they get 5.3 assists and 33 minutes out of Lou Williams? I would take the under on both of those. It's not like he shot an extraordinarily high percentage. 43.5% from the field is not something that's unachievable for Williams. So he could still do that. He could still hit his 36% from three. He's still going to get to the line a lot and hit a lot of free throws, which is insanely valuable in fantasy. 88% on six attempts is a massive, massive number. And that's only a little bit up from the 5.6 attempts he took last season. But I just do think that there is a chance that the minutes, the scoring, the assists, they all do dip next season and probably leave him outside the top 50. I wouldn't be wanting to draft a 32-year-old potential sixth man with other guards coming back into the rotation inside my top 50. But the free throw percentage impact, the points impact, it does have its own specific value when we look at it for fantasy. Of course, Williams has real concerns defensively. Yeah, he's a horrendous defensive player. Negative 2.9 box score plus minus, which is clearly not very good. He was a 2.3 on off, which is obviously solid. But offense is where the name of the game is for Big Lou Williams. Toby Harris, who came across in that Blake Griffin trade, he was absolutely excellent this season. He is going to turn 26 at the start of next season, played 80 games in 33 minutes, 18.6 points, 2.3 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.9 steals, 0.4 blocks, 46, 83, and 41% from three for Toby Harris to be the 56th ranked player this season. He put up career highs in scoring, up from 16 points per game the year before. He saw his three-pointers go from 1.3 to 2.3. His three-point percentage go from 34, which it had been at the previous two seasons, up to 41. And that's obviously a big reason for that increase in scoring that that Toby Harris was able to do. Now, one thing he wasn't able to do is get defensive numbers happening. 0.9 steals and 0.4 blocks is obviously not fantastic. And his rebounds never really recovering to the numbers that we saw that he was able to do at times during his stint in Orlando. But one thing to really pay attention to is in his 48 games for Detroit, he averaged 4.3 rebounds. In his 32 games for the Clippers, he averaged 5.3 rebounds. And that, to me, is the Andre Drummond effect. Per 36 minutes, it's 4.8 compared to 5.6. And while it might not seem like much, like an extra rebound per game is an impactful thing. Like when you're averaging 5 rebounds to 6 rebounds, you're talking about an additional 20% production in that category. And that is the Andre Drummond effect. Back in Orlando, he was averaging 5.9, 5.4, 6.5 rebounds per 36. In Detroit, it was 5, 4.8, and that's the difference. And that's something that we might be able to see him bump that up over the course of a full season in LA. As long as he can keep that scoring going, which I imagine he will. There's no player coming back to really take his role. Yeah, Beverly comes back, but he's not. Beverly's coming back impacts Lou Williams because of the playing time and how they fit together. It doesn't impact in terms of usage. So therefore, to Tobias Harris, Beverly returning, I don't think really does impact what Harris is going to do. He is the player that they want to be their best player. And he should be a chance to be a top 50 guy next season. But I think probably a more realistic expectation is him being a top 60 guy, top 70 guy. But in his time in LA, he was the 27th ranked player. 20 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Like that's what he averaged in LA as the 27th ranked player. So top 50 is very much not out of reach, not out of the realms of possibility for Tobias Harris after a really, really strong season. And it got better after he was traded, which is not something that happens all that often. Pat Beverly, a lost season, 11 games, 30 minutes, 12 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1.8 steals. That made him the 63rd ranked player on a per game basis. If he is back, he's going to be 30. But if he is back and in a decent enough role, he's someone that I would look at as a last pick in the draft. But I don't think he's going to be able to replicate the 63rd rank again next year. He did come out of the gates playing pretty well. Didn't shoot well, 40% from the field overall, but a strong rebounding guard, the good steals numbers, and the good three. So what you get out of Beverly is you get subpar assists, but you get threes and you get steals at decent rates, and he's a good rebounder for a guard. And they're the sort of things that you should be counting on. So I guess, yeah, maybe a top 100 finish isn't out of the realms of possibility, especially if he is getting 30 minutes per night, which of course is a decent possibility. DeAndre Jordan. He's going to be 30 as well by the time the season starts. 32 minutes per game, 12 points and 15 rebounds. So obviously the rebounding numbers are excellent and they're keeping his rank really high. 0.5 steals, 0.9 blocks, 65 from the field, and a putrid 58% from the line, which is still an improvement on what he had done previously. Compared to the year before when he was playing with Chris Paul all year and playing with Blake Griffin for most of it, he did see his efficiency dip from 71% down to 65%. And while it's 65% is still excellent, it's not as good as 71 because I know how to use numbers. And it does dip his value. Now, he was 67th overall in fantasy rank, but if we're being honest, you know, we're punting free throws with him, we can take those numbers away, and he's a top 40, top 30 sort of a player in that scenario. But the rebounding went up this year, the scoring went down, but more worrying is the block shots. His previous four seasons, 2.5, 2.2, 2.3, 1.7, this year, 0.9. That is a massive, massive drop-off, and you were drafting Jordan for rebounds, field goal percentage, and blocks. And you saw a decrease in two of those categories. Field goal percentage, you could have predicted, maybe thinking, all right, no Chris Paul, maybe not as easy shots, that's fine. Blocks, absolutely no idea. Like, I don't know why. Is it a lack of athleticism? Is it the fact that he is now, you know, 30 years of age and he's not as in tune defensively? Did he check out because the team was, you know, starting to tear things down and he wasn't happy with that? He has had some good defensive seasons. He's also been overrated defensively at times in his career as well. And amazingly, he was a team worst in on-off, negative 6.9 points per 100 possessions. The team was better with him on the bench than on the court. And that is an absolutely staggering number. It shows how well the table Montrezl Harrell played. It shows how well Boban played in his limited playing time. It really is a staggering number to see DeAndre Jordan that far down in terms of his overall impact on a team. And it's not the be-all and end-all of everything, but when you're down that low, that's pretty piss poor. His block percentage is in the 45th percentile of big men, and that is just not good enough for a guy like DeAndre Jordan. And that's the real worry. His age, the declining field goal percentage, the declining blocks, what team is he going to be on? I think we might see DeAndre Jordan fall a little bit again next season, or at least stay at this level and not improve to where he had been. Now, I do have to give him kudos. He did hit 10% more of his free throws. That's great. It means absolutely jack shit for fantasy because you are still punting that category. Although he was a negative 4.3 Z score in free throws last season, this season, negative 2.5. Anything over negative 2 to me is punt. So he's getting closer there. But his numbers also did decline as the season went on, which is also a little bit of a cause for concern. But still a punt guy, just not quite as aggressive. But if you're punting it, it doesn't matter if he shoots 0 for 1,000 or if he shoots 50 out of 100. You're just discounting that category immediately anyway. So it doesn't really matter if he goes from 48 to 52 on that many attempts. It's still shit and you're still not winning that category. So that's the way I'm looking at Big Jordo. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, Jesus. He's going to be 30 as well by the time the season starts. 22 games. He's played 31 minutes a game, 15 points, 1.6 threes, 4.6 rebounds, 2 assists, half a steal, half a block, and horrendous shooting. 39.8 from the field, 93 from the line on 4 attempts, which is real sexy, and 32% from 3. But of course, it was the injuries. He tore his ass muscle multiple times. He had hand issues. He just continually gets injured. And you know that I am not someone that criticizes someone for getting injuries. I will never label a player soft at all. It's out of his control, this shit that happens. But at some point, and this is the point we're at with Gallinari now, is that his body just isn't capable of maintaining the stresses of elite level physical activity. Nothing to do with him mentally. He isn't soft. There's none of that bullshit and I won't hear any of it. But at some point, the way his body responds to getting knocked, the way his nerve endings are sensitive, the way his muscle fibers are fragile, you can't have faith in it. Now, he was the 109th ranked player this year. He was inside the top 60 the previous two seasons, and he probably would have been back to that this year if he could have at least shot the ball. He was only at 39%. He was at 45 last year and 39 from three. You bump those two numbers up, along with the high free throw percentage, which he also dipped in his attempts down from 6 to 4, which is a curious thing, and also didn't like the way that he was being used offensively. Everything else was sort of in line where it needed to be. It was just that shooting percentage dropped off, and he didn't attack the rim as hard as what we'd seen in the past. And that's I guess, something of a concern for him. In how much of that was the injury? Was he scared of ripping an ass muscle again? And that's why he wasn't attacking. Was it an unfamiliarity with a coaching style? Was Doc Rivers not encouraging him to do that and not wanting the ball in his hands? All those things, I think, are significant factors. He's not a very good defender. Not as bad as others on this team. Shout out to Lou Williams. But that shooting was really, really disappointing. And did impact his overall numbers, and he would have been okay. But for now, to me, and look, players are injury prone until they're not, and players are iron men until they're not. I say this all the time because, you know, people can just spout on and on and on about players being, oh, they never miss games and all this stuff. And you hear about Damian Lillard all the time, even though he misses 7 games a year every year around Christmas for some reason. And it's hard to shake that label. And DeAndre Jordan, a guy, never missed a game. Well, he missed 5 this year. And 5 isn't much, but it is still games that are missed. And Anthony Davis, oh, he's never going to stay healthy, yet he plays in 75 games per year the last 2 years. So there is a chance that Gallinari can stay healthy. The odds of it happening are minimal, but yeah, he is going to fall really far in drafts, and he is going to be outside the top 100. And I would have no problem in grabbing him with my last pick. Because if he starts the season out hot, and if he's healthy to start the season, he will be inside the top 100. He'll be 60th. And then you might be able to parlay that into a trade for somebody else. Or then if he gets hurt, you go, oh, well, I got 2 months worth of top 60 production out of my 135th pick. I'll take it. There's no lose scenario there. And that's the way, much like I approached Tyreek Evans this season. Grab these guys that people are letting fall who have that top 60 upside. And if it works out, you are set. And if it doesn't, oh, well, you move on. And that's the way I think we should be approaching the Rooster from here on out. Austin Rivers, 118th ranked player this year. He is 25 years of age, played 61 games, 34 minutes, 15, 2.5 and 4, 2 threes, 1.2 steals, 42, 64 and 38%. Efficiency is always a concern. The true shooting's not bad. It's not good, 53%. The 3-point percentage is what I meant to say is pretty good, but poor field goal percentage, poor free throw percentage. But scored well. Easily the best season of his career with 15 points per game, 4 assists per game, played some point guard, played some 2, played some 3. Over a steal per game, another career high there for Austin Rivers. Really was able to step it up in those areas. But again, with Patrick Beverley coming back, does he get the opportunity to have the assists that he had this season? I think the steals can stay. I think that the efficiency levels, as inefficient as they are, can stay. But will he get 34 minutes per game? That feels a little bit high. If Gallinari's back, if Beverly's back, Harris, Williams, Milos, assuming all these guys are healthy, plus potentially the 12th and 13th pick, or a higher one, the 7th pick, the 8th pick, whatever they end up doing there, there's a real chance that Rivers is not a 34-minute per game player next season. Doc is coaching him, so we always have to factor that into the consideration. But yeah, last year, Doc coached him and he played 28 minutes. The year before, Doc coached him and he played 22 minutes. The year before, Doc coached him and he played 21 minutes. So it's not like he was getting 33 minutes every night. A lot of it was out of necessity with those injuries in the backcourt to Milos and Beverly that he had to play, and he had to take on a large, large role. And we did see him start to fade a little bit as the season progressed after such a huge role that he was playing the majority of the year. But I think he's one of the toughest bastards in the NBA. I think he's also, from appearances, and from what you see and from what you hear, also one of the more annoying dicks in the league, but he is a real tough prick out there, and I respect him for that. He's had to deal with a lot. You know, people hang shit on him left, right, and center, and oh, he's played 12 million bucks. You, Josh, who can handle it? Yeah, he can, but still, anyway. He's a solid NBA player. He probably doesn't deserve 34 minutes per game. He's not good enough for that, but he was impressive in what he was able to do for this team. Still has defensive limitations and negative defensive box score plus minus, a PER of only 12. But overall, it was a decently solid season, although the team was 3.9 points per 100 possessions better off with him on the bench. Weirdly, in those on-off numbers, is Toby Harris was a negative 4.7 as well. So the three worst players on this team in terms of on-off were Rivers, Harris, and Jordan. And the best players on this team were Boban, Sam Decker, and Pat Beverley. And of course, they all played limited minutes. But if we're looking at high-minute players, it was the table, and it was Lou Williams in that position. Austin Rivers, a guy I don't think that will be able to replicate that, and probably will find himself outside the top 150 next season. Let's look at Milos, the 31-year-old rookie, or 30-year-old rookie when the season started. Only 45 games due to the dreaded plantar fasciitis. 25 minutes, 9.5 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 4.5 assists and half a steal. 42 from the field, 85 from the line, and 38 from 3. Outside of the minutes and the injuries, pretty much what we expected from Milos. He came over, he hit threes, and he did it efficiently. 38% is fine, 43% over his last 18 games after starting out the season shooting really low or really poorly. 47% from the field overall in those last 18 games. Per 36, he averaged 13.6 points, almost 3 triples, 4 rebounds, and 6.5 assists. These are all good numbers. The injury, again, is what did really hurt him. We didn't get many steals, but he is a guy, again, that if we see him in a 28-minute role per game next year, going to be hard with Beverly, Rivers, Williams all vying for those minutes and the potential appearance of Ty Wallace, who played well. And will he be able to get more minutes than that? Don't know, but if he does, the reliability of 2-plus threes and 6.5 to 7 assists is useful. The high free throw percentage is great. Doesn't get to the line at all and really doesn't want to drive into the rim hardly ever. And that is a concern. And defense, of course, is a real issue. He's really, really poor defensively. And yeah, a pairing of him and Lou Williams in the backcourt is absolute murder for your team's overall defense. And dealing with that all season without Beverly around to pair with him, it did make Doc Rivers' life hard there. But I thought that Milos, after a really slow start, and everyone remembers the slow start, man, what's wrong with this guy? He's so shit. He can't hit any shots. He really struggled early on, came back from that plantar fasciitis and had issues all through the season and was back and forth in terms of roles in the starting lineup or roles off the bench. But the shooting did start to come good for him as the season rolled on. He was able to put up some decent numbers in limited minutes. But if he's not getting 30 minutes a night, then I think it's going to be hard to rely upon him to be a regular fantasy contributor and more likely going to be a deeper league guy. Avery Bradley, it was not a good season for Avery Bradley. A lot of people were anticipating that Braddles would become a real steal in drafts, and people, I'm taking him top 50. And I was never on board with that. It's one of the things that I did get right. Got things wrong, no doubt. I didn't see that when in his time in Detroit. I thought there's no way he's going to be averaging the massive amounts of rebounds he averaged in Boston. Clearly, that didn't happen as those numbers really did dip as he transitioned to playing next to Andre Drummond. In fact, he averaged only 2.4 rebounds in Detroit, 2.5 overall for the season after averaging 6.1 last year. He still only averaged 3.7 in LA, obviously better than in Detroit though. But what really did hamper him was the shooting, down to 41% from the field, and he saw his three-point percentage drop down to 37%. Couldn't really get much done there. For as good as a defender he is, he doesn't generate steals at a high rate. And he finished the season as the 171st ranked player after being ranked 58th last year. And the large discrepancy between those two seasons is the difference between his rebound numbers from 6.1 down to 2.5. Assists are the same. Threes, almost the same. Points, 2 points less per game. Steals, 0.2 steals less. Efficiency dipped by 5 percentage points, and the rebounds were more than cut in half. I think that him, depending on where he goes, I don't think he's ever going to have one of those 6 rebounds per game type of seasons. But we could see him get the efficiency back to 45%, maybe, depending on the team. Maybe he's 15 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and that puts him maybe in the top 100 conversation. Maybe. Or maybe he's just not good anymore. He is still only 25. He's still only 27. So there is still room for him to get better, or at least maintain this level of production. but I'm just not I'm not expecting a rise back to the top 60 level player that we saw from Avery in his time in Boston in that last season. He only ended up playing 6 games for the Clippers this season, so we didn't really get a massive sample size to see there. He didn't play well during that time, struggled mightily offensively, hit 11% of his threes in that time. So it's a little bit unfair to get too bogged down in what he did in his time in LA. But I have concerns with him being able to produce this, although the 16-17 numbers as we move forward. The next guy, the table, Montrezl Harrell, 24 years of age, 17 minutes, 11-4, half a steal, 0.7 blocks, but 64% from the field, actually higher than his free throw percentage, which is 63%, was really impressive for a true shooting of 65%, and he snuck himself inside the top 200 for fantasy. Now, he's a guy that's a plug-and-play 12 or 14 team league guy. Shit, I need some rebounds. I need some high efficiency scoring. Hey, I think that I can use the table Montrezl Harrell in that sort of situation. But overall, I don't know that he's ever got the juice to become a must-own player. But in saying all of that, his last 6 games of the season, 19-3, 16-8, 17-3, 14-3, 15-8-6 with 2 steals and 3 blocks, which is a ridiculous line in 33 minutes, and 15-4-3 with a steal and a block. If DeAndre Jordan goes and they don't find another center to replace him, and they want to start Montrezl Harrell, then yes, I would think that he is a standard league threat and a potential top 100 guy. But with a lot of these centers that we talk about, I'm not sure that his defensive stuff and his block numbers are quite as good as what they need to be. But in fairness to him, 1.4 blocks per 36 is not horrendous. It's not the best, but it's not horrendous. He actually had a block percentage higher than DeAndre Jordan, which is a staggering thing to me to see that. And he could be a guy that does crack the top 100. I don't think he's got top 50, top 70, top 80 upside. I think he's more likely to be a top 120 guy. He is not a very good rebounder at all, in the 15th percentile in terms of defensive rebounding, which is clearly putrid. A pretty good offensive rebounder, but overall, 8.5 rebounds per 36 for a guy playing predominantly at center is not a good number, and that does impact his overall fantasy value. But he's young, he showed enough, and there's an opportunity potentially looming his way here if DeAndre does not return to the Clippers, where the table could be a starter, could find himself at 26 or 27 minutes per game, and then he's going to be quite a useful option. Now we're down to the dregs of this team. I spoke about Juwan Evans and Sindarius Thornwell in the 2017 draft recap shows, pretty much at length with those guys. They struggled, but I thought they were able to contribute at times and showed flashes, and I think that Juwan could find himself, when you see Milos gone or when Pat Beverley's gone, he could find himself in a backup point guard role. Ty the List Manager Wallace was impressive too. 24 years of age he's going to be. 30 games, 28 minutes, almost 10 points, 3.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.9 steals, half a block, 45-78, and only 25% from three. He showed an ability to play excellent defense, to be a guy that passed at a high rate as well. And I was really impressed with Wallace. But again, with 4 guards coming back who will likely be ahead of him, yeah, he can play the 3, but if the Rooster's back, does he get just backup minutes there? I think it's unlikely that he is able to reproduce what he did last season on this really injury-prone Clippers team. But in a very deep league, which you'd have to be a 20-teamer, a 30-teamer, Wallace was a top 200 player this season. I think that he's got a chance to maybe be a top 250 guy next year, but I think expecting 28 minutes per game out of the List Manager is probably setting your bar a little bit too high. CJ Williams, another two-way guy. He's already 28 years of age. I don't think there's much upside in him. He only played 19 minutes per game, and he played some okay minutes for them. Steal rate was pretty good, but he's not a high volume scorer or stat accumulator really in any area. Let's talk Boban, who came across in that trade. Everyone really does love the old Dutch Schrodder on Boban, and they've Boban must own. People were talking about that before the season, which was nonsense. People were talking about that after the trade, which was nonsense, and we clearly saw that it was nonsense. He finished the season as the 330th ranked player this season, which is clearly not a must-own player, but a monster PER of 30, strong offensive box score plus minus, still can be a negative defensively, a negative 1.1, and can get picked on quite a bit in that area. But he is a guy that we know that puts up numbers in the limited minutes that he is out there. He played only 8.3 minutes per game in his 20 minutes, but averaged 6 points. He averaged 4.4 rebounds, 0.3 blocks, and of course, he's an excellent shooter from the field and for the line, or from the line. From a per 36 basis, this is why his numbers always look so good. 25 and 19 he averaged per 36 minutes. 1.3 steals, 1.1 blocks on 55 and 79%. But is Boban a guy that can stay on the court enough to be useful in fantasy? He probably only needs 22 minutes a night to be a 12-team league guy. I don't see him getting 22 minutes a night. Yes, DeAndre Jordan could go. Maybe he plays 20 minutes behind Montrezl Harrell, but he had opportunities this season, and that never really happened in Detroit, where Eric Morland jumped ahead of him. And even in LA, despite playing and despite Doc Rivers saying, oh, we're going to get Boban minutes and having a few nice things, like he probably cost the Nuggets a playoff spot on his own with a third quarter run against them, an improbable performance. And even look, the last two games of the year, 14 minutes and 13 minutes, 12 and 9 and 12 and 10. Shit, I'll take that. I'll take those numbers. But I don't have full faith that A, he's going to be able to do that on a regular basis or play that amount of minutes. I don't think he played, or he did, so he had one game of 22 minutes all of last season where he had 15, 9, and 3. And again, if he gets 22 a night, then he's a clear guy that you want to own. I just think, given what we've seen out of him in his time in the NBA, given the way that other teams can go at him, given the way that his coaches treat him, given the fact that he's 30 years of age, I don't think we're going to be seeing all of a sudden Boban come in and play 22 minutes a night and average 14 and 9 with 1.6 blocks. It could. If he plays those minutes, it probably would happen. I just don't think it necessarily will. And the hype on him is always going to be out of control. Sam Dekker was really piss poor. Massive opportunity for him last season. Did not take advantage of it. 12 minutes, 4.2 points, 2.4 rebounds. While Wes Johnson also fell away. And Johnson, when Johnson starts, he is a triple one. 20 minutes for Johnson this year. 0.8 threes, 1 steal, 0.8 blocks. That's a triple one. That's useful. But he was so in and out. His scoring is non-existent. He really is just a stream for those options. Whereas, so Johnson and Dekker, I don't really see much of them. And I had a little bit of faith in Sam Dekker having an opportunity this season. Obviously, didn't come to fruition. And my hope on him is pretty much kaput. All right, that wraps it up for the recap of the LA Clippers. Don't forget, a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts would be excellent if you could do that. And also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. And you can leave a thumbs up on YouTube as well. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net and LockedOnSports.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jawan Evans.